Ladies and gentlemen, the time has come. I hope that things go better today than they did yesterday. Yesterday proved to be a bit of a disaster for me, and I'm going to start by just telling you a very, very little bit about it. My wife and I were driving over from Ann Arbor, and everything was fine till we got within a stone's throw of the Hyatt Regency. Now, if you know, when you're on the expressway out here and you're a stone's throw away, you still don't know how to get here. We drove around the block. It was a 5-mile block. And we finally ended up in front of the Hyatt. And what did I do but make a wrong turn that took me right back on the expressway? My wife said, and I wish I had taken her advice, stop, back up. And that would have been the smart thing to do, but I didn't. So we drove another 5 miles all the way around. And finally, after 10 additional miles, we arrived. Now, we had a lot of things with us, including our own personal luggage, but some material which had to be delivered to Don Fink, our operations director. So first I asked at the desk, where was the ACE meeting going to be, and where would Mr. Fink be? And they told me the Viscount room. Now, I knew they meant Viscount, but that didn't make any difference. They said, go to the Viscount room. So the bellhop, who had this stack of stuff, took me off to the Viscount room. And I said, this doesn't look like it, but I peeked around the door, and there was Don Fink. So I immediately barged right in, and that was an awful thing to do, because Art Stern, who was the president of IEEE, was running a closed regional meeting for his people. I thinking, you know, I was in a rush to get rid of all this stuff and thinking that Don was having just some little affair, was ready to drop all of this in his lap. And I'm sure, Art, that that really upset things, and I owe you a very deep apology. My temper was a bit up from my 10-mile pleasure drive around the airport and so forth, and I wasn't thinking very sharply at the time. As a matter of fact, it made me think of a real old story of how one should think on his feet, and maybe many of you have heard this a long time back, about the fellow who was sitting in church and the minister was orating on in his usual way, and this fellow began to get sleepy and his head drooped more and more, and finally he was sound asleep. The minister noticed this and he said, I'll take care of him. So the minister said very softly, all those who want to sin and go to hell, please raise their hands. This fellow heard the last part of it, you know, and boy, he jumped to his feet and put his hand up like that. Then he looked around the room. There wasn't another soul standing. Turned to the reverend. He says, Reverend, I don't know what we're voting on, but I guess you and I are the only ones in favor of it. Now, I think most of you recognize the fact that this is really a rather historical meeting. It is probably the largest meeting of engineering society talent that has ever been put together. In other words, we have more officers and executive secretaries and directors than has been gathered at any other time. If you know anything about the history, it is really a follow-up of the Joint Societies Forum, which was a rather informal sort of meeting which was held every year, to which were invited the presidents and occasionally the presidents-elect of the many engineering societies, but not the executive secretaries or executive directors. They were specifically excluded. Now, there were two things about the Joint Society's forum that seemed to be greatly deficient in the opinion of many people. First of all, it was not an action organization. It was nothing but a debating forum. Even though it was wonderful for all the officers to come together once a year, nothing could be done as a result of it. They came here, they introduced themselves, and they chatted, and that in itself was very good. But following upon that, nothing could be done because there was no organization. And the second thing was that it specifically excluded the executive directors. Now, everybody knows that the continuity of any professional society is carried on, really, by the executive director and his staff. After all, the elected society presidents and other officers come and go, but the executive director is in the saddle year after year, and he's the one that provides the continuity. And it seemed that this was a great mistake in organization, if you want to call that an organization. Now, about 4 or 5 years ago, there was held several conferences by Engineers Joint Council in which they treated a number of subjects of importance to all engineers. And it came through very loud and clear that the thing which was uppermost in the minds of many rank and file engineers was some sort of unification of the engineering profession. Every member felt that he was in an important society of his own, but still those who had a broad viewpoint of the profession realized that many of the problems that we are dealing with today were by no means limited to any one disciplined society. And so they urged that somehow there be something a little bit different from anything that we had that would bring the many different societies together. A lengthy study followed. This study, by the way, went back and reviewed all of the history of engineering societies back into the 1800s. And little by little, we were able to get ideas out on the table on a mechanism by which we might get together and promote cooperation between the various societies. And the result of it, which you all know by now, is the Association for Cooperation in Engineering. Now, in a sense, you might call this a commencement. And by that, I mean that although we have been through all of this groundwork in getting an organization going, our real work is just commencing. And that is, what do we do in the way of cooperation? Now, already we have endeavored to identify a few problems that are common to all and to get some groups started. We hope that as a result of the various discussions that we will have here today and tomorrow, that we may explore some other avenues of cooperation beyond those that are already started. And certainly we will be looking for suggestions from each and every one of you for anything that you see that would be an appropriate activity for the association. Now, in speaking of the association, we should recognize a few very important things. First of all, I mentioned Don Fink's name, and I think most of you know Don Fink. The Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers very kindly offered to furnish the secretariat for ACE for a 2-year period. And they offered Don services along with Audrey Van Dort sitting on the far end there. And they've done a fantastic job of handling the mechanical details of ACE during the year of its formation, you might say, and the planning of this particular meeting. And to them, We owe great thanks, believe me. Now, at this time, what we would like to do is to get introductions from each one of you in this particular way, largely so that we will know each other a little bit better, and then we can go ahead with our business. Now, I have with me really a third person. It's in the form of this little bar light that you see right here. People have told me that I'm cutting my throat by using this device, but we shall see what happens. I call it an intimidator, and you can already figure out how it works. It's very simple. If we have the problem of a number of people introducing themselves and telling us a little bit about their organization, we know that enthusiasm is such, as it should be, that some people may want to speak a little bit long. And also, when one is speaking on things that he's enthused about, it is very difficult to keep looking at his watch. And so this really is here as an aid to each one of you when we call upon you. Now, the operation is going to be very simple. Don Fink will have it on green when you start. And when you have 1 minute to go, it will go on orange. There it is. See how automatic it is? And then when you're supposed to wind up like that, it will go on red. And I hope that you will understand that it's here really to help you more than anything else. Now, here's the way we would like to conduct the introductions. For each society, there is one person who is the official representative. In most cases, that person is the president. But if the president was unable to be here, he was authorized to send his official representative. We want whoever is the official representative to stand up and introduce all of his colleagues as well as himself. For example, it might be the president introducing himself, introducing, oh, let's say, his president-elect or past president, and his executive secretary or director. Then we also would like to have that official representative refer to the advanced reports which he may have sent in. Now, you all have these. And give us a couple of minutes about what he thinks are the high spots of his society's activities at the present time. Is it clear as to what we are looking for? We're going to begin over on my left, starting right here, unless there's a question. Yes?
I forgot to say how long the green light is on.
The green light is going to be adjusted by Don Fink according to the time schedule, and there'll be just a little bit of flexibility in there, and we'll try and do it. We'll try and do it in such a manner that it is roughly equal for everyone. Probably, it depends how many people are going to be speaking about their reports. We also realize that there may be some people that wish to do very little other than introduce themselves, but that's up to you, and we'll simply try and adjust and be flexible here.
What will be the first time?
Oh, I would say of the order of 4 minutes.
Plus one,
total of 5. To start with. But just, you know, you're engineers. You can quickly calculate 37 societies times 5 minutes, and we'll get out at 10 o'clock tonight. I mean, that doesn't take any figuring.
Will the Air Pollution Control Association at the head of the alphabet keep friendly in mind the Water Pollution Control Federation?
The other end of the list.
Now, are there any other questions before we endeavor now to get acquainted? All right, then we're going to start right over here. Whoever is first of the group. And we'd like to have the people stand as you introduce them.
Okay, my name is Sherwood DeForest, President of the American Society of Agricultural Engineers. And I have with me Dr. Frank D. Lanham, who was president-elect. He has a
Excuse me, I anticipate one problem, and it may be voice throw. Could you slip that mic off of the post right there and hold it, please? Thank you. Just push it up, and it'll come right off the post. Thank you very much. And we also have with us today Jimmy L. Butt, who is our Executive Vice President. I'd like to refer to page 10 in the material you have in front of you, which is the information on our society, but I will not go into detail on that because you notice I turned my back to that light. And I wanted to tell you about some of the presidential focuses which we have instituted this year in ASAE. They are the agricultural engineer's responsibility in a food short world. And our emphasis in that is on standards and technological exchanges and the strengthening of our geographic units. The second focus is increased emphasis on agricultural engineering in government and or lawmaking agencies. And we are have approved the establishment of a congressional fellow, and of course this is where our standards are important again. A third focus is increased service to members, and we are focusing on a program for continuing education, special conferences, and special publications. And we have hired a new staff member to concentrate on continuing education. And our fourth focus is to develop increased sources of income, and our emphasis there is on standards and publications and special conferences. Now, I mentioned special conferences, and we tried this year a new method for a theme meeting at our annual meeting at Davis, California in June. And our emphasis there was productivity, resources, environment, interface. And we approached this from this standpoint to have special speakers to develop the theme. And we concentrated one day on establishing new plateaus in productivity, and the second day the speakers stressed the striking the balance between these three parts of our theme. And as a result of this emphasis, we published a summary, a theme abstracts, which I brought, and we have enough copies, I believe, Jimmy, to pass around to all of you if you have an interest in them. I also have extra copies of our presidential focus, which you might like to look over. We are continuing our emphasis on productivity in our December meeting, when our theme will be Productivity, Key to World Food Shortages. And a special conference we had this past year was the third International Symposium on Livestock Waste. Now, you as engineers might not have as much interest in livestock waste as agricultural engineers, but I'd like to point out to you that livestock waste is an unused resource which we have in the world today, and our emphasis here was in making use of unused resources. The last item I have is the announcement that we will be sponsoring, along with other engineering societies, the World Food Congress on Engineering and Food, which will be held in Boston in the fall of 1976. Thank you very much. You coincided exactly with the red light. You beat that. All right, let's begin over there. John Houston.
I think you can hear me without that light. In the back. My name is John Houston. I'm past president of American Institute of Industrial Engineering. We also have...
John, you should be telling one of your stories. They'd hear that.
How much more?
Not that much.
brakes squeal.
No. I'm not going to look that way. We have with us also this year's president, Dr. Bill Smith, and our executive director, Jack Jericho. And both of them have told me we're going to make a record for the shortest presentation here this morning. Two things we've been doing this year, we're going to continue to do next year, but I think will be of interest to most of your societies. Number one, we've had some serious problems with our members in Mexico, our members in Canada, and some of the other international members. They resist us, they don't like the name of our society, like perhaps some of the rest of them. They want us to change that American part. We're not going to do that immediately, but we are giving more emphasis to those members. We've just established Mexico as a separate region, and as soon as we can work out the details, we'll establish Canada as a region. We hope to go from there and expand even further. Depending on the countries, we're not sure. Korea has a group that we're interested in, and other countries are interested in joining. We think this is the way to get the job done. Secondly, we dedicated all of our efforts this year to the productivity concept. I don't know if the ag engineers beat us or not, but we are doing that. You're going to short-circuit me. All our efforts this year, all our conferences are aimed at productivity. We've been in Washington working with Senator Nunn. Our people have been down there talking about ways to improve national productivity. We're having a conference upcoming. Jack, the date of it? November 19th through 21 in a sedate little resort area in Reno, Nevada, Las Vegas. If you're interested in attending, we can get program copies for you. Thank you.
Thank you, John. I think you're very productive in the choice of the location for your conference. That was the American Institute of Industrial Engineers. All right, Bill?
I'm Bill Johnson, President of the Society of Manufacturing Engineers. I have Bill Hewitt, the immediate past president, Society of Manufacturing Engineers. We are an organization of 42,000 engineers internationally, a staff of 100, and a budget of $4 million. And the background information is in the report. Two key items that we continue to be most interested in, and that is certification of manufacturing engineers, as well as recertification. In other words, engineers must stay abreast of their particular discipline. We're in the process of registering as PEs, manufacturing engineers, in the state of California. In the next 2 years, expect to register some 15,000 manufacturing engineers. And other than that, the information's there.
Thank you very much, Bill. Let's see, we'll go back there. Murray, I think you ought to be next. This is Professor W.J.M. Douglas, and he's a visitor here today from Canada.
Our society is, of course, not a member of this organization, ACE, the Canadian Society of Chemical Engineers, and I'm here as, an observer today, compliments of my old thermodynamics professor, J.J. Martin, for which I'm very appreciative. I've talked with Joe numerous times in recent years, knowing his intense involvement with the unification operation in the United States, and during my year last year as president of our society, and now past president, we got involved with the unification movement in Canada, unification of engineering societies. We're not as far along this as you folks are, and so I'm here sort of on an educational mission today to pick up ideas on how the road is going for you folks in working out the modalities, organization of engineers, cooperative actions, and the kind of things that you can do together. So I am very appreciative of this. In our own society, it's a fairly small society. We have only about 3,000 members in Canada. We do have close links in the U.S. To our fraternal colleagues in the American Institute of Chemical Engineers. We have joint meetings with them every few years, and so we have rather close relations across the border in that point of view. I think maybe our top priority item at the moment is to try to bring to fruition in Canada some kind of an engineering organization, which the details of which haven't yet been clarified in the crystal ball, but we're looking at various models of how we can get together and work together for the benefit of all engineers. And again, Joe, thanks very much for inviting me here today.
Well, thank you for coming, Murray. I think, however, if you are looking to us for leadership, that's the case of the blind leading the blind. We are just getting started. All right, Herman.
The National Council of Engineering Examiners is an entirely voluntary association of the state registration board for the registration of professional engineers and land surveyors. Martin Fine of the Connecticut board is the president. He couldn't make it. I'm Herman Munch of Indiana, the president-elect. There are 55 of these agencies. That seems strange since there are only 50 states, but it includes also the District of Columbia, Canal Zone, Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, and Guam. And these associate together to try to improve the mechanisms for the registration of engineers, particularly to facilitate multi-state registration so that an engineer in one state can easily move to another and legally practice. The National Council has no legal status, but certainly the state boards do. And as these regulatory agencies grew up under individual state laws, there was a great diversity in requirements. The National Council was formed in 1920 to try to unify and coordinate this kind of work, and it has succeeded in producing a model law which has been used in many states, particularly recently in Montana. It also has worked very diligently recently to develop uniform examinations. These are now in use by all but a few of the states, and these uniform exams constitute a major project of the National Council. We hope that in the future we can improve the quality of these exams, that we can profit by the suggestions from other engineering groups as to methods to improve the usefulness of registration and the quality of the engineers who are legally admitted to practice. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Harold Michael. I'm from Purdue University, but I'm here as president of the Institute of Traffic Engineers. And President Martin has already told you what we exist for. We're the people who determine that it takes 10 minutes to get from after you see it across the road and so forth. No, seriously, we try to prevent this, of course, and that's the reason there probably wasn't some professionals working on that particular design of this situation that he expressed here this morning. I also turn my back on this thing up here, and I call it a thing because it's not a traffic signal. There are many things wrong with it as far as the traffic signal is concerned. Of greatest significance is, if you look at it, it has go in both directions. And I mean to tell you, that would really cause problems. Many of the ones that have stood up here before have indicated that you should turn to such and such a page. Well, you can turn to page 19, but you'll find it blank as far as the Institute of Traffic Engineers is concerned, because I've been gone for 6 weeks, and as a consequence, I wasn't able to get it in, and our executive director felt that he should have something as important as this, have my comments on it before he sent it in. I did give some copies to the young lady up here, though, and if you're interested in a copy, you can get one from her. The Institute of Traffic Engineers is a professional society for those professionals who are engaged in the planning of transportation systems and in the geometric design and operation of highways, highway networks, and in terminals. We have a number of objectives towards meeting human needs for mobility and safety, to promote the professional development of our members, and we do this through the support and encouragement of education in transportation, stimulation of research, development of public awareness, and exchange of professional information. We're a technical society, and most of our activities are concerned with that. We're organized into 8 districts throughout the world. 6 of these districts are in the United States, 1 is in Canada, and 1 is the rest of the world. We also have a consultants council, an urban traffic engineers council, and an international council. And our international headquarters is Washington, D.C. It's really Arlington, Virginia, but we call that Washington. We have grades of membership of 3 grades, like many do, fellows, members, and associate members. And then we have a few other things besides this. Characteristics of our members you might be interested in. We have 5,800 members in 60 countries. 90% of them have college degrees. 60% are in government, because most of our people work for cities, counties, or states, or something of this sort. 20% are in the consulting field. 10% are in education. And 10% are in associations, industry, safety groups, and so forth. 2/3 of our members are registered professional engineers. 1/2 have had graduate training in some transportation science, and over 500 are outside the United States and Canada. We also have an associated organization division of 50 members, 50 member organizations, which is a part of the Institute. We publish a traffic engineering magazine, and we publish many traffic engineering professional texts. We have 2 specific publications which are well known, the Traffic Engineering Handbook and the Manual of Traffic Engineering Studies, new editions of which will both be out this year in 1975. We also publish a quarterly technical notes, which is new, and we have about 50 technical committees who are developing standards, regulations, rules, and things of this particular sort. This is our primary activity through these technical committees of developing standards for the professional field. We develop and are presently developing and publishing a technician training program, which is a self-teaching course for technicians to assist the engineers. And we have a $440,000 budget. Our dues range from $10 for students. We have 35 student chapters, and up to $75 for fellows. Our future plans is to extend in this particular area. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Leave.
I'm Lee Harrisberger, president of the American Society for Engineering Education. Our delegation that's with me today includes Don Marlowe, our executive director, based in Washington, D.C. Many of you know Don as a former president of the American Society for Mechanical Engineers, and has been active in professional activities for many, many years, and we're delighted to have him join us this year as our new executive director. Also is George Burnett, who is president-elect from Iowa State, and then Dick Winerdy, who is from Texas A&M and heads up our new energy task force. American Society for Engineering Education is the only society for engineering education in this country, and it involves about 1/2 of the working professors in engineering education. It's one of the most diverse societies in that everything that's engineering's business is ASEE's business, because almost everybody that's in engineering, not almost, but everybody in engineering is concerned with the education of engineers and the training of engineers and engineers associates. Therefore, we are a very diverse and broadly based society, but we have 2 or 3 very strong emphasis points of emphasis this year. In particular is our association with the concept of ACE and our interest in outreach, you might say. We have established and are working on to develop a very strong campus activity coordinator network. This is our field service unit, kind of like the agricultural people have for county agents, in that we want a representative on every campus who will be responsible for bringing the resources of the society and other societies to the campus, as it would be helpful to engineering education. In this respect, then, we are very much interested in associating with other associations and their interest in the training of engineers and the education of engineers, and having them take advantage of the big CAC network in providing resources to these people to help bring this information and these new ideas to the campus where they can be implemented into the educational process. We've also established a new international advisory committee in our international division. to be concerned with all of the problems of engineering education worldwide. This is an outgrowth of the World Congress that we put on in Estes Park this year with the assistance of AID to look at the international problems of educating engineers for the development of less developed countries and whatever. We also have established a new association member council. We have 600 institutional members, and all of the associations are invited to become members of ASEE and to coordinate their educational divisions with the various educational units of ASEE in this common effort that we all share. So it's an exciting society, and we're delighted to be involved in this Association for Cooperation in Engineering and Engineering Education.
Thank you. Warren?
You're not counting tribal time.
We're counting now. Well, this is portal to portal.
I'm not taking any chances with Joe's machine. This is a time statement, gentlemen, so check me out. I'm Warren Alberts, President of Engineers Joint Council, and I'd like to introduce Bryce McDonald, Director of Engineering for Kennecott Copper, who's one of our vice presidents, and Carl Fry, our Executive Director. Now, here goes. Our boilerplate is on page 15, and I'd just like to make a few comments on some of our current activities which may be of interest to you. The first, and productivity seems to be very popular. We had a very unique opportunity to cooperate with the government in our joint sponsorship with the President's National Commission of Productivity and Work Quality on a conference of productivity, which engineering, productivity through engineering in New York, May 22nd and May 23rd. The response was such that we are scheduling a second conference in New York, October 29th and 30th. This will draw largely from case histories from different industrial sectors. In the engineering manpower area, you'll hear more about the Engineering Manpower Conference, which was jointly sponsored by EJC and the Engineering Foundation at Henniker at the program tomorrow. And then I think most of you are familiar with the manpower policy statement, which was issued in May, and the fact that the latest engineering demand study is just off the press. With help from the National Science Foundation, the EJC's Commission on Engineering Information has recently published a guide to engineering information sources, which is designed to help the working engineer determine where to go to get the data he needs. We've also just received a grant from the National Science Foundation to conduct a seminar for engineering educators to incorporate the principles of engineering information storage and retrieval into the curriculum of engineering colleges. The last item is that EJC's Commission for the American Bicentennial is organizing an international engineering conference to be held at Ames, Iowa, from July 12th to the 14th in 1976. The theme of the conference is going to be the transfer of technology between nations. The basic conference will be 3 days, followed by 2 days of supplementary sessions and visits. And at the suggestion of the committee, they are extending an invitation to ACE to hold your 76th annual meeting at Ames, and an excellent opportunity for the presidents of the societies to meet with engineers from all over the world. God.
It's a shattering experience, isn't it? All right, Carolyn. You can use that mic or this one, either one.
I'm Carolyn Phillips, President of the Society of Women Engineers, and I'd like to introduce our Vice President, Arminta Harness. SWE is having a good year and a bad year. It's our 25th anniversary year, and we've had some real good successes. On page 27 in your handout, you can find some of our goals and objectives. I'm sure by now most of you have heard of us and kind of know what we're here about. Our problem is that our membership has doubled in the last 2 years. It's a great problem, but it's one we're suddenly having to face. We're now up to 3,000 members from about 1,500 a couple of years ago. and this has caused us to make some real radical changes in our methods of operation and in looking at our future problems. We're going to be adding another vice president to our executive committee. We have decided to give our students representation on our council. So many of our members now are students, that we're going to give them a voice on our council to get their thoughts in. We have even decided at our last convention to accept men into membership in the society. So that we are no longer discriminatory.
Equal rights amendment.
Right. One of the things this has forced us to do, and this is what we kind of dread, is we're probably going to have to go to computerizing our membership records and stuff. And I know most of you have been through this in the past, so now we're going to go through this year. And we also are facing financial problems with this rapid growth and with the number of our students. So we will be reevaluating our whole financial picture and seeing what we can do to improve that. We are increasing our working arrangements with other groups. We have a working arrangement with a group in ASEE. We're beginning to start some work with a group in IEEE. We've done some work with ASME. And we'd like to initiate some cooperative efforts with many of the other societies, if possible. And in addition, many of us are looking forward to something in September, which is the 4th International Conference of Women Engineers, where we're going to get together with women from all around the world about similar problems.
Thank you. Let's see, Art, are you...
I'm Arthur Fox, President-elect of the American Society of Civil Engineers, and I'm pleased to introduce to you our past president, Frank Noonan, from Houston. Frank serves on ACES Congressional Liaison Task Force, Lou Meyer, our Washington Council, and Dr. Eugene Zwoyer, Executive Director. ASCE, business since 1852, is now 70,000 members, and believe it or not, there are 2,600 of them working on 424 committees right at this minute, national committees. In recent months and in the past year or two, we've had a renewed emphasis on the construction industry and ASE's role in the industry. We've taken a role in the formation of the National Construction Industry Council and in the business of that single voice group which developed within this year. We've taken positions this year on the need for a federal office of construction and the need for a federal policy supporting stabilization of the industry. Somewhat of a departure from the past, perhaps we've even taken stands on such labor management issues as Situs picketing against, and we're developing a position on the Davis-Bacon Act for its repeal. Also in the current year, ASE has issued new policy statements on such broad public issues as national water policy, energy policy, transportation policy, in its efforts to increase the civil's impact on national policies relating to these issues. Internally, we've been deeply concerned with the professional welfare of the members in activities that range from promulgation of salary and employment guidelines to the hearing and deciding of professional conduct cases. In a great effort to increase and improve communications between national and local factions of the society and among its professional and technical constituencies, we developed a series of grassroots management conferences that we hope we're going to take effect. And we've developed a new newspaper, which will alternate with our magazine, Civil Engineering, giving us a twice-monthly communication medium. This is a sample copy. It perhaps will begin publication in January. Finally, the ASCE is deeply concerned with inter-society affairs through its activity in ICED, the Interprofessional Council on Environmental Design, in ECPD, in EJC, and in ACE.
Thank you very much, Art. I love your last sentence where it says, though we will raise dues a modest $5.
I'm Ken Colder, President of the American Institute of Chemical Engineers. F.J. Van Antwerp and our Executive Secretary will be in a little bit. And we have other members here, but I don't see any of our other officers at the present time. AICG at the present time has about 40,000 members, about 1,400 are in the academic area. 60% of these people are in some type of supervisory or management type of jobs in industry. Our budget at the present time is around $3 million. About 50% of this goes into publications. We're real active in continuing education. We have continuing education sessions at all of our national meetings. At our Houston meeting last spring, we had 1,000 enrolled in the courses that we have. We also have a number of these courses at local sections around the country, of which we have 100, approximately 100 local sections. At the present time, we have one in The Hague. The rest of them are in the United States. We're real active in accreditation. We're making some studies at the present time on future educational needs. This is being done by a group in one of the local sections and one of the universities around. We're real concerned at the present time with employer-employee relations. Two of our past presidents were real active with AJC and getting the guidelines put together. And since these guidelines have been out, we've had some activity, particularly up through the northeastern part of the United States, in regard to guidelines. Some of these sections are not satisfied with the guidelines. They want them to be minimum standards of employment. They want whitelist, blacklist, and anatomy of layoffs, and so forth. We've strongly resisted this as a council. And in order to get a better understanding of this employer-employee relationship, we've had executive luncheons for many years with employers in the areas of our convention sites. We have a meeting lined up with TAPI, the Technical Association of Pulp and Paper Groups. We've had one with API. We've had one with the Personnel Committee of Manufacturing Chemists Association. We're having another one with the Executive Committee of Manufacturing Chemists Association. So we're attempting to talk about the employer-employee problem because we're real concerned with the unionization that's taking place among teachers on the college campus and so forth. We think if it would spread to the technical societies, that it would be a real disaster. So we're trying to talk this problem through. We have a dynamic objectives study coming up, planning our future for the years to come. We've just recently added a new assistant secretary to work on public relations. We've added another one to work with our local sections. We're active in the World Federation of Engineering Organizations, the Inter-American Confederation of Chemical Engineers. We hold joint meetings with the Latin American group, Germany, Japan, Canada, and others.
Thank you.
Bob Beckman, the President of the Engineers Council for Professional Development. With me here today is Paul Allmendinger, our Vice President. Executive Secretary David Reyes-Guerra could not be here today. The ECPD, of course, is quite familiar to at least 15 of the organizations represented here today, inasmuch as the ECPD is not an individual member organization, but rather a federation of 14 participating bodies and one member body. Unfortunately, the ASEE said they were the only organization devoted to engineering education, so I don't know where that leaves us, but if they're devoted to engineering education, I guess you could say we make the exams and grade them. The ECPD is, as most of you are aware, devoted principally and almost entirely to the accreditation evaluation of engineering education programs at the basic and advanced level and engineering technology programs at the associate two-year degree level and baccalaureate four-year degree level. In addition to that, we have an extensive program of guidance at the pre-college level in association with other organizations. Our annual meeting is this fall in Kansas City, October 5th, 6th, and 7th, of which the main theme, of course, is a critique of the ECPD and its accreditation process, where we're going from here, what does it look like for the future, will there be new avenues of the accreditation process, and matters of this kind. Thank you very much.
My name is Jean Salmon. I'm the president of the Association for Computing Machinery here as a guest Unfortunately, somehow in all of the flow of papers that came to me with regard to ACE, the only paper that never got to me was the one asking for a written statement. So I apologize for not having prepared one. I'll try and give you a brief indication of why we have an interest here. And the main reason that ACM, in any sense whatsoever, is concerned with engineering is because of the fact that programming, which is our main activity, is now undergoing considerable technical soul-searching as to whether this is really an art, a science, a form of engineering, or anything of that kind. And that's why our concern is, to some extent, in the engineering concepts. ACM is the oldest and the largest of the educational, technical, and scientific societies in the field of information processing. One of the basic formal purposes is simply to advance the sciences and arts of information processing. We have about 30,000 members. We're about 28 years old, which makes us a baby insofar as the engineering societies are concerned, but when one recognizes that the first commercial computer was not installed until 1951 and ACM was founded in 1947, I guess we're not doing too badly from an historical point of view. We do have about 30,000 members, including about 6,000 students. We are very definitely international and have a very large component of members overseas and an even larger component of subscribers overseas, which is sort of nice. Our budget is about $2 million, of which roughly half goes into publications. We put out about 5 major scholarly publications, with a 6th one coming up next year. One of the ones that conceivably might be of some interest to some of the people in your societies is one called Computing Reviews, which provides critiques of material in the computing literature, including some of the applications. We have over 100 regular chapters and 100 student chapters, which of course are geographically organized as they would be in any society. We also have about 30 special interest groups and committees, which in some sense correspond to the computers, to the groups in the IEEE conceptually. I don't mean the topics are the same. To give you an indication of the diversity of this association, and some speaker made the comment earlier that it was a very diverse organization, and as I heard that, all I could think is, you guys, you're very cohesive compared with the problems we've got. We run the gamut from such things as automata theory, which is a very abstract mathematical concept, to design automation, programming languages, simulation, architecture. We've just formed something called software engineering. We haven't quite figured out what that is yet, but it pertains to the practical matter of really getting problems and programs run. In spite of the fact that our title is the Association for Computing Machinery, our main emphasis has been in the area of software. We run or are involved in over 30 conferences a year, and one of the major activities that we've started this past year, which is of great personal interest to me, is in the area of self-assessment and trying to get tests which people can take at home as an educational experience. Thank you.
Paul, Executive Director of the Society of American Military Engineers. I'm here in the absence of Admiral Marshall, our president. Our write-up's on page 23, and I thought I would just spend a minute telling you how we're different, I think, from most of the societies. We include all of the engineer disciplines, although most of our members are civil engineers. We also have many mechanical, electrical, aerospace, and you name it. And over 90% have degrees. You might be surprised to find that only 20% of our people, although we are the military engineers, are in uniform. And there's something more than that who are civilian employees in government. And the other half of our members are reserve officers, past officers, and other people who have an interest in the military and also in engineering. We have 165 posts all over the world, and it's interesting that our newest posts are where the work is, one in Fairbanks, Alaska, because of the pipeline, one in Tehran. We think we're going to have one in Saudi Arabia, and in all places we have one in Diego Garcia. Our society is recovering from Vietnam. We were hit very hard by the unpopularity of the military. For example, the campus riots, the abolition of ROTC, particularly in the East, cost us over 1,000 student members in 1 year. So we lost members for 6 years, and we did a lot of soul searching, we did a lot of studying, and in brief, we found that instead of just inviting people to join, we had to actually go down and actively recruit. And with that in mind, we've been working at it, and our membership is going up again this year for the first time. And we hope we can keep it going up. I think I'll just make one comment. We have a post in ADAC out in the Aleutians, and it has the best attendance of any of our posts. Because when we have our meeting at the Officers Club, there's no place else to eat.
I'm Gerler. I'm local. I'm a guest here just as an observer, kind of. I belong nationally to the IEEE. And I'm wearing about four hats here today, and I'm to take back to our boards. I'm on the Illinois Engineering Council. I'm the past president of the Western Society of Engineers, which is a local group, 106 years old. Well, we're national, actually, but it's primarily local. By the way, there's an article in the latest Reader's Digest about Octave Chanute, and he mentions our society. I think we're about the third or fourth oldest in the country. I'm currently the president of the Chicago Technical Society Council, which a number of you people belong to locally. And I'm chairman of the Washington Award Commission, which a number of you societies belong to, and was awarded to David Packard last year. And I'm also on the Chicago Engineering and Science Center, so I'll take back to their boards what goes on here today, and I'm glad to have you in Chicago.
Glad to have you aboard, Ken. Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Leslie C. Gates, past president of the National Society of Professional Engineers, and I come from wild, wonderful, almost heaven, West Virginia. With me this morning is Paul H. Robbins, executive director of NSPE. And I bring to you the regrets of Harry Bovee, our president, who is unable to be here this morning. On page 22, you'll find the statistical information with respect to the National Society of Professional Engineers. I'd like to call your attention to two errors. First of all, the membership now is 72,000. And at the bottom of the page, in the paragraph headed Professional Relations, we now have 15 liaison societies. During the year, we increased our membership of student members by 1,200. We had about a 3% increase in our full membership. We have been involved in many of the normal activities that have been historic with NSPE, including the tripartite guidance program. We have been involved in 15 community action programs with local engineer involvements in projects such as power plant site selection and harbor development. Our liaison society has continued to grow, as I indicated, with the addition of two societies during the year. We've had a major leadership role in continuing qualification for the practice of engineering, and held a major conference on engineering education with emphasis on the professional school concept. Aside from that, we've had many legislative involvements in Washington on a myriad of subjects, including OSHA, big trucks, and so forth. It's been an exciting year. First of all, we were found guilty of being in violation of the Sherman Act, and more recently, less than a month ago, the United States Supreme Court vacated that decision, so we're pretty happy about all that today. And you'll hear more about it a little later on.
Thank you very much, Les.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Joe Alford, Executive Director of AIME, the American Institute of Mining, Metallurgical, and Petroleum Engineers. Our president, Mr. James D. Riley, will be here shortly. And in his absence, I'll give you a brief report. Page 6 of the documents contains data on our institute. Briefly, we are a federation of engineers involved in the extractive industries, mining engineering, iron and steel, metallurgical engineering, and petroleum engineering. Our key concern this year is energy, as we're all concerned with energy, but our institute covers the technology of some 95% of our energy resource materials in the fossil fuels, coal, uranium, petroleum, so on. We're experiencing a tremendous increase in interest in coal and mining engineering in this respect. There's a great shortage of engineers in this field. We're also experiencing and seeing a decline in oil production, oil and gas production in the United States. We have definitely peaked in this country. And then an increase, likewise, internationally in oil and gas and offshore development. A figure that might interest all of you was the attendance at the Offshore Technology Conference last May, which a number of our societies participate in and which we manage for these societies. Total attendance was 52,000 people with 2,600 exhibit spaces, and it's just a tremendous indication of offshore development that's still rising. Our membership has held up well this year. Our revenues have held up well from membership dues. Dues constitute 29% of our membership. And all in all, we're having a good year. We're deeply concerned with all of you on the matters relating to energy and materials in our nation, and cooperating with all of you to try to solve them. Thank you.
My name is Billy Sumner. I'm the current president of the American Consulting Engineers Council, and our executive director is with me, Don Bazell. ACEC is almost 2 years old, being an organization that represents a consolidation of the American Institute of Consulting Engineers, founded in 1910, and the Consulting Engineers Council U.S., founded in 1955. We are a federation of state and regional associations whose members make up about 40% of the consulting engineers in the country, doing about 60% of the business, we think, nearly 3,000 firms. We have organizations in all of the U.S. except Heavenly West Virginia and Cold Alaska. We're concerned primarily with the business and management interests of engineers in private practice. We attempt to encourage the and promote the use of private independent consulting services. We try to articulate the views of the consulting engineer in local, state, and national affairs. We advocate to our members high standards of professional conduct and service to the client and the public, and we try to assist consulting engineers in improving their management efficiency and profitability. We have a staff of 20 in Washington. We have a dues income of $800,000 and an additional cash flow of perhaps $300,000. Obviously, one of our primary concerns are national legislative affairs, and particularly at this time, the EPA and problems associated with PL92-500 and lack of progress and so forth. We are very active in the international area, working with AGC and NAC in the export of engineering and construction services, and trying to get our government to get out of our way, at least in that area. We have an active seminar and workshop program, and the usual concerns with the inroads of government and the ever-increasing control of private business of all kinds. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to introduce the next two gentlemen. First, we have John Alden in the back. John, would you stand up? He's the Executive Secretary of the Engineering Manpower Commission of Engineers Joint Council. And you're going to hear a lot more from him later in the meeting. And on the in the far corner is Ken Davis, W.K. Davis, of Bechtel Corporation, who is chairman of our Energy Committee, and you're going to be hearing from Ken very shortly. Stand up, though, Ken. You may not have to give the speech now, but we have to know who you are. Now we're going to proceed from the back to the front, and we'll start right next to Ken there.
From the Arthur D. Little Company, and I'm president-elect of the Society of Plastics Engineers. With me is Robert Forger, our executive director. The Society of Plastics Engineers is an organization of individuals, not companies. We have approximately 18,000 members. We have 70 sections, most of them in this country, but we have sections in Canada, Mexico, France, Belgium, Italy, Japan, and Switzerland, and we have cooperative efforts with several other national organizations overseas. We operate on about $1.25 million budget per year. We have a staff of, 23 in Greenwich, under Bob. Our major activities are in the areas of technical conferences, seminars and publications. We have two magazines, one aimed at a more pragmatic level, a practical level, plastics engineering, and a highly scientific journal, Polymer Science and Engineering. We indulge in a great deal of educational activity and standards and things of this nature. The area of expertise in our society cuts across the entire economic structure of the country, ranging all the way from simple things like toys and consumer goods up to very sophisticated medical, electrical, aerospace, and nuclear applications. At the same time, our degree of expertise in our members has a similar range. We have a great many highly technical polymer scientists, but we also have very, again, pragmatic people, designers, producers, and even marketing people in the plastics industry. A major problem we have these days is the public relations. Plastics has become a little bit of a whipping boy among a lot of people. Environmentalists, lacking anything else to attack, have attacked plastics unduly many times. On the other hand, we suffer sometimes from too much praise in that people oftentimes refer to it as miracle plastics when they see one or two applications that really have never been accomplished by any other means. So we suffer on both extremes. And a major part of our effort these days is in trying to rectify this situation, bringing it into line and doing it with cooperative efforts with other engineering groups like yourselves and with the government and with the public. Thank you.
I'm Don Niles, Executive Committee for Society for Experimental Stress Analysis. We're a very small society. The engineering specialty is to prevent things from breaking. Our work extends from Boeing 747 wings down to the buckles on brassiere straps, which is an equally interesting problem. I've come here primarily to listen. I find I can learn more by listening to my speaking, so thank you.
President of the American Society of Safety Engineers, our society has a little bit of each of you in ourselves. We're over 60 years old, and we are experiencing 10 to 15% growth every year because of the interest in safety. There's currently approximately 14,000 of us. Many of our membership are registered professional engineers. Our budget extends over $500,000. We publish a journal called Professional Safety. We maintain a liaison in Washington, and sometimes it seems somewhat futile. We're going to try a new approach this year. We're going to have an open seminar for all engineering professions to come and be our guests, and perhaps as engineers we can present a united front on how to sort some things out on safety. I think the major problem is that the politicians fail to listen to the technology, and that's why we have a lot of problems. Our major effort in the society is educational. We have some 50 degree programs around the country in colleges that specialize in some form of safety. We have over 150 courses on basics on safety engineering and related topics. And the thing that we're most pleased with is that engineers from other professions are generally the most in attendance. And our major goal is to work with all professions because we're part of you, and maybe we can bring a little order out of the chaos together. Thank you.
I'm Bill Collins, president of the American Society of Heating, Refrigerating, and Air Conditioning Engineers. And with me here today are Bill Chapman, our president-elect, and Andy Boggs, our executive director. There's an overview of ASHRAE in page 8, and since I assume you've all read it, I'll try not to repeat anything that's there, but perhaps mention a few things that aren't. First of all, we're structured into 10 regions, 9 in the United States and 1 in Canada, and each of those regions has a meeting once a year in addition to the annual and semi-annual meeting of the society. Our main thrust for the past year, and probably the main thrust that we'll continue with this year and for some time to come, is energy conservation. That holds true both in our research program and our standards program, our educational program, all throughout the society. I'm sure that some of you have heard of Standard 90P, energy conservation in new building construction. Normally it takes ASHRAE about 5 years to develop a standard. We've developed this standard in a year and a half. 2 weeks ago, the Project Committee and the Standards Committee both approved the final draft of the document. It's been sent to the Board of Directors for letter ballot, which closes Monday. But Mr. Boggs tells me we already have enough affirmative votes to know that the standard is passed, so it will become a standard of ASHRAE in the immediate future. This expediting of this standard is due primarily to a large committee, project committee of some 120 people, and about thousands of reviewers. We now are ready to go on to an educational campaign to bring to the public the method in which this standard can be implemented. And we are also working on another standard for energy conservation in existing buildings. The yellow light's on, so I'll quit. Thank you.
I'm Arthur Stern, this year's president of the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers. We are a rather large organization. We have about 175,000 members throughout the world. We are organized in around 200 sections, and we are represented at over 400 universities in most civilized countries. And I'll leave it up to you to judge what you consider civilized countries these days. We are a decentralized organization in 30-odd technical specialties, each of which operates essentially as a semi-independent and quite autonomous society or group. Some of them are called societies, others are called groups. We publish about 40 journals, and we run somewhere between 200 and 300 major conferences per year throughout the world. And I think we are rather well known for the technical, educational, and scientific accomplishments of our members and our participant organizations throughout the world. In recent years, our membership in the United States became greatly interested in non-technical activities and problems associated with engineering. The reason for this increasing interest is the recognition that most of the problems of our society, the very great problems of our society, for their solution require heavy engineering participation, heavy technical participation, and that this participation of engineers in the solution of our society's problems calls for greater recognition of engineers and engineering than has been the case in the past. We feel that there are two sides to this. On the one hand, we feel that the recognition for engineers ought to increase, that engineers are entitled to more than they have been getting in the past. On the other hand, we also feel that when we are asking for a greater recognition of engineers, we have to discharge our responsibilities to society in an organized and consistent fashion. As a result of this, the Institute has been increasingly taking public positions on important issues. We have recently taken a position on the problem of the constantly decreasing research and development funding by the U.S. government in the United States. We have taken a position on energy. We have even taken positions on such state matters as a popular initiative in California on the subject of nuclear power plants, which is highly restrictive and whose adoption would result in increasing the strength of the nuclear blackmail, of the energy blackmail that is being applied against the United States these days. We feel that in order to achieve the objectives of the engineering profession, both in terms of gaining better recognition for engineers and in terms of gaining greater and more beneficial influence on the public, greater unity of the engineering societies and of the engineering professions are needed. We have demonstrated the extreme of unity in one respect. We have amalgamated the Institute of Radio Engineers and the American Institute of Electrical Engineers about 12 years ago. We find that such an experience is a somewhat upsetting one, but after a while it can be digested and it works. And we also feel that continued fractionation of the engineering profession isn't going to lead us anywhere. Thank you very much.
There are several colleagues of ours. Hal Chestnut, past president of IEEE, stand up, Hal. Herbert A. Schulke, Bud Schulke, who's their executive secretary, I believe. He's not here.
Let me do that because I forgot about that. Schulke isn't here. Schulke Diller, our executive vice president this year.
Good. And Ralph.
So is Ralph Clark, who's associated with our Washington office.
Very good. Thank you. All right, George.
Good morning.
ladies and gentlemen. I'm George Huebner, president of the Society of Automotive Engineers. With me today is Mr. Joe Gilbert, our general manager. The SAE was founded in 1905 as a cross-disciplinary society. In other words, to meet the needs of technical engineers within industry rather than engineers identified with a particular discipline. And our field covers research, development, design, construction, utilization of automobiles, trucks, buses, off-highway equipment for farm, construction and recreational use, aircraft and aerospace vehicles, and mass transit systems. We have about 26,000 engineer members representing just about every engineering discipline, and scientists and people who interface with engineers. They're located in 51 local sections in the United States, Canada, Mexico, and in some 73 foreign countries. In addition, we have 4,000 student level members and 73 student branches. We sponsor meetings, seminars, conferences, and continuing education courses for the exchange of technical information. These range in size from the Automotive Engineering Congress and Exposition, which attracts some 30,000 participants in Detroit annually, to small local gatherings of 20 to 30. We formulate engineering standards, recommended practices, test procedures, engineering reports under the banner of our Cooperative Engineering Program, and we conduct research on a contract basis. We have an extensive record of service to many governmental agencies and military groups concerned with transportation. But in recent years, we've been devoting more attention to this. Our members desire a more active service to society. In the last few years, we have conducted studies for the EPA, test method for uniform procedure to determine automotive fuel economy, for DOT, a study of fuel economy for trucks, and interfacing with IRDA, the New Energy Research and Development Administration, for advanced propulsion systems. We are now located in Warrendale, Pennsylvania, as of September 1974. We have reduced our expenditures there by several hundred thousand dollars. Thank you.
I am Vic Wagner, President-elect of the Water Pollution Control Federation. I have with me Robert Canham, our Executive Secretary, who runs our office in Washington, D.C. We're the last ones, the last page in all the pre-material that was sent out, and I assume that everybody read all the way through to the end. Some material was not in there. We are a federation of 62 member associations throughout the world. 39 of them are in the U.S., covering all states, including West Virginia and Alaska. Our objectives were for the dissemination of practical knowledge in the area of water pollution control. We are in favor of environmental concern. We are still in favor of environmental concern versus environmental hysteria. We operate with an annual budget of approximately $2 million. A couple of our publications you might be interested in are their journal, which is the foremost journal on or publication on water pollution research, water pollution control. We anticipate that it's read by 20 people for each journal. That gives us a worldwide readership of about 500,000. We are concerned with government affairs, or public affairs, if you will. We have an annual government affairs seminar in Washington. In 1974, we had a series of workshops on Public Law 92-500. In 1970, the following year, we had a workshop on changes of Public Law 92-500. The material that was contained or obtained in this has been copied and by other organizations as their objectives. Our annual conference will be in Miami, Florida this year, in which we anticipate there'll be about 8,500, with a reconvened session in San Juan. That means that we have good planning for the future and where we're going to hold these things so that everybody will enjoy themselves.
You all are invited. As they said in Miami, come see us, bring your money.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Len Coleman. I am representing the Society of Motion Picture Television Engineers. In lieu of Ken Mason, the president who cannot make it, I am one of the members of the Board of Governors and held various offices in the Society. The Society of SMPTE, to simplify it, SMPTE, has actually been founded in 1916. We currently have 7,500 members. We are a guest of ACE today, more as an observer, as many of you are. We're looking more or less into the aspect of the advancement of the television engineering and also the standardization of the work throughout communications throughout the world. Our society is international in aspect. We're represented throughout many of the countries throughout the world. Again, a roll of motion picture film can be shown anywhere in the world without any problem based on the international standards that have been set up. Our organization is divided into four classifications of membership. There is a fellow, an active, an associate, and a student. We rely highly on the student memberships. We sponsor scholarships throughout the United States with the idea of propagating more members for our SMPTE and also our discipline in the arts. Thank you very much.
My name is Paul Ramsey, president of the American Welding Society, and I'd like to introduce Ed Dato, our executive director, also a past national president, and we're also very pleased to have our wives with us this morning. The American Welding Society is another interdisciplinary society. We're very much interested in some of the, what you might call, ecumenical aspects of our meeting today. Here is a guest, and our write-up is on the second page under Guest Society Reports. Some 24,500 members in the United States, 135 local sections carry on the local activities. We do publish the Welding Journal, which contains both the practical and the scientific side of our work, which is to advance the proper use of welding and the associated processes. Some 800 of our members are at work on our committees, issuing standards, recommended practices, and specifications. We are quite active in promoting a new program on qualification of welding personnel, and we hope to work very closely with a number of our other brother societies in making this program work. We're establishing a communications program with government liaison functions in the future. Another program on the welding environment is being funded and will be carried out at Battelle under our direction. We're looking into non-technical services, the professional aspect of our members' needs. The Society's headquarters moved from New York City to Miami about 4 years ago, and we have a staff of 50 people there. Budget of almost $2 million, relatively healthy financial condition.
I'm Charlie Tutt, president of the American Society of Mechanical Engineers. We're not an international society. You have our information, I think you'll find on page 12 of our current information. I think one thing perhaps where we're different in many ways is that unless something is exclusively within ASME's area of technical concern, ASME is always out looking for other people to assist them in accomplishing their objectives. We do this by association with you other societies, with appropriate engineering and other organizations, both of you. We are having much of a change in some of our insight in ASME in that we have a new policy board which we call Member Interests and Development. We're finding many of the same problems and interests that were described by Art Stern in IEEE. And basically, that is what's going on in ASME today. With me, Earl Miller, our president-elect, Rogers Finch, our executive director, and Bill Miller, our Washington representative.
Good morning. I'm Bob Anderson, the technical director of the American Society for Non-Destructive Testing. I'm a delegation of one. And the reason being obvious that our headquarters offices are 15 miles from this hotel. Our president, Mr. Carl Shaw, had hoped as late as yesterday that he might attend, and he may still. Our resume is on the first page of the guest societies. I won't repeat all the information therein. We are a 7,000-member technical society. We have about 60 sections. Incidentally, we have sections in West Virginia and Alaska. Our roots stem to 1941 when we had the exotic name of the American Industrial Radium and X-Ray Society. The name was changed in 1946 to the Society for Non-Destructive Testing, and we today are the American Society for Non-Destructive Testing. We are members of the Federation of Material Societies. We are associate members of EJC. We're active in international affairs, being members of IIW Commission 5 and ISO, the International Organization for Standards. We our current major projects are the development of a training and certification program, which we hope to launch shortly, imminently, and our handbook revision. We have, in 1959, published a 2,000-page handbook. 1959, it seems like a long time ago, and we find it necessary to revise that. We hope to have a multi-volume format, probably 6 volumes of over 3,000 pages. Thank you.
I'm Bill McLaren, President of the Society of Fire Protection Engineers. I thought the red light would be on already. I'd like to introduce Pete Lund, our Executive Director. You'll find our resume on page 25. I'd like just to make a few additional comments. We added 5 new chapters last year, have a total of 26 chapters. We're not a large society, but we do affect your everyday lives. And as you can see, if you look overhead, we took the time to install sprinklers here so that you'd walk out of here safe. We had a 2-day think tank session up at the Harrison House on Lake Bluff here the last 2 days, trying to solve some of our problems, our society problems. I think we had a very good, 2 good days of thinking. Our members have been deeply involved in the last 2 years, particularly this last year, and many of you maybe saw the towering inferno. High-rise buildings has been one of our problems. The protection of burnable plastics is another. So we are deeply involved in practically any aspect of life today. Thank you very much.
I'm Richard Allegro, President of the National Institute of Ceramic Engineers. We're the professional arm of the American Ceramic Society and are dedicated to advancing the professional recognition of ceramic engineering and ceramic engineers. We're on page 21 of the supplement. Our chief programs this year include this business of recognition, and we're working on a careers program to encourage greater student enrollment. We graduate less than 200 ceramic engineers a year, and therefore our enrollment or our membership constitutes about 1,600 members. We're working nationally on this with hopefully articles in the Reader's Digest and other magazines of general interest. We have worked closely on registration and certification, and we do have this now in all 50 states. We're also launching a program for continuing education of our ceramic engineering members. And we're hoping in the next 5 years to increase our membership to about 3,000. Thank you.
I am Jack Walkman, President of the Federation of Material Societies, which is an association concerned with the effective utilization of materials. Our summary was not included in the package that was sent to you in the mail, but it is in the set which was handed out at registration this morning on page 16. We are not quite as young as ACE, since we were incorporated in 1972. We have 11 member societies, 4 contributing observers, and a number of others who participate in some degree. Effective utilization of materials to us includes concern with the full range of economic, social, and environmental consequences associated with the total cycle of materials use. Many technical societies deal in depth with some portion of this cycle of use. Our goal is to assist them in dealing with issues which impact them but which are broader than their own technical interest. A couple of examples of our work: the proceedings of our 1974 Conference on National Materials Policy will be available soon. Our 1976 Conference on National Materials Policy will be held in Henniker, New Hampshire, August 8 to 13, 1976. We are currently completing an assessment of sources of materials information for the Office of Technology Assessment of the United States Congress. I have some copies of our latest report, our latest annual report, for those who may be interested. Thank you.
I'm Dan Fink, newly passed president of the American Institute of Aeronautics and Astronautics. Dan Fink is not to be confused with Don Fink, which is very difficult. When I checked in last night, they were sure I was already here. The only reason I'm alone today is because we do have an unfortunate conflict. We have a major meeting out in the West Coast and a board meeting tomorrow, so my associates couldn't be here. Fred Bagby, one of our members, is here. He's been active in ACE, and you'll hear from him very shortly. Our write-up is on page 3, as I recall, containing most of the statistics. Just one point of, I think, of interest. About a couple of years ago, we ran a rather exhaustive poll of our membership to get a feeling of what they wanted to see in our society, and as opposed to what the few elite members might have wanted. As a result, we had a major constitutional revision last year, adding two new segments, a Department for Career Environment and one for Public Policy, basically recognizing activities that already started. We chose the word career environment rather carefully as opposed to professionalism, because we are concerned that of the separation of the technical aspects from the word professionalism. We are involved in a number of programs often requested by federal government in areas such as fuel conservation, export of aircraft technology quite recently. We've done a major technical assessment each year. Last year it was on planetary exploration. This year it's on solar energy, and we expect that work to continue. Part of that poll, by the way, of our membership indicated a continued interest in Federation activities and engineering societies, so we will continue to be a very strong supporter of ACE. Thank you.
Of the Illuminating Engineering Society of North America, and I should like to introduce Frank Corder, our executive vice president. I'd hoped to be the last one, but couldn't quite make it, because I thought if I was the last one, then this device wouldn't work for me, and I'd have the rest of the conference to myself.
You should have sat in the front row.
Yeah, right. The Illuminating Engineering Society, or IES as we call it,